23rd meeting of the Development and Engineering Advisory Board. We'll start with introductions. I'll start Mike Odrin with McKay Sposito, and you guys can go ahead and take it in the room.
Andrew Gunther, PLS Engineering.
Seth Pauling with AKS Engineering.
Eric Galimo, SJ Engineering.
Victoria Abram, Community Development.
And just go around the room.
Dan Weisner, Songbird Homes.
Sherry Those Jones, in... Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Hey, Sherry's there. Hey. I didn't see you. Huh, weird.
Yeah, I just snuck in, so sorry I'm a couple minutes late.
No worries. Hey, anybody else in the room, in-person room? I see.
We do have some guests in the back.
Melanie Davis, Community Development.
April Firth, Community Development.
Justin Wood, Clark County Association of Realtors.
Brandon Erickson with Erickson Structural Consulting Engineer. And I've submitted an application for the board.
Oh, Brad Swanson, great. Clark County Public Works.
If that's it in the room, we'll go to the people online. I'll just name them off. Teresa.
Teresa Hardy.
Naomi.
Naomi Paribanla, Development Engineering.
Krista.
Krista Kobleski from OTAC.
Ross.
Hi, Ross Hoover, Clark County Parks and Nature.
Jackie?
Jackie Lane, just person.
Brittany?
Brittany Salter, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Amy?
Yeah, Amy Thatcher, Water Resource Engineer with OTAC.
And Houston?
Houston Aho, Aho Construction.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Anybody else that we missed? All right, hearing none. Just a reminder that the D meetings are recorded and they will be posted on the audio will be posted on the DEEBS website. At this time, we'll go ahead and review and adopt the minutes. I have reviewed it and adopted, but since I'm running the show, we'll go ahead and I would accept a motion.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Very good. Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed or abstentions? All right, that moves. So we've adopted the minutes. Victoria, would you like to review the upcoming events, please? Doesn't look like there's many.
All right. For the county council meetings in February, there was one on Tuesday the 4th. I did not put any items on our agenda since there was multiple items. I did add a link to the agenda. There's a couple separate business items and then a couple consents that they had on file for that. On Wednesday, February 5th, there's a work session that occurred yesterday for a department's overviews for community development, public works, and community planning, and their timeline for the 2025 comp plan update. For planning commission work sessions on Thursday, February 6th, this evening at 5:30, they have an agenda for a comprehensive plan update, comp plan policy for community framework plan, schools chapter 10, annexation chapter 12, shoreline master program chapter 13. And as of this morning, there were no public planning public hearings scheduled for February.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Victoria. Any member announcements?
Mike, if I may, I just didn't see on the agenda any updates on kind of the open seats and if we've received applications. So it would be great if we could get an update on that.
Yeah, I have added that we're going to hit that after the other agenda items. So I think that would be an appropriate time for that. We'll be cognizant of other people's time. And I did send out an email to the D members that I did want to discuss that today as well. So,
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you.
Hey, Mike, with regard to the work session with council, is there any action or plan for when that'll occur?
Work session on what?
Well, with county council to go over work plan.
Oh, as far as the schedule is concerned?
Yeah, I know it takes a while to coordinate the schedule, and it'd be good if we could get it in motion.
Sure, that's a great idea. Victoria, would you take a look at the council's calendar, upcoming calendar? We've usually held these, or at least tried to schedule them in March. And knowing that it does take a while, we've had them as late as April. So if you can take a look and see when we might be able to have an opportunity to get in front of the board for our annual presentation, that would be great. And then let's correspond via email on that based on whatever you find out, and hopefully we can get a time that works for everyone.
I could do that.
Great. Thank you. If there aren't any other member announcements, we'll move on to our first agenda item, or our second agenda item here tonight. Today, Parks Department discussion. Ross, thank you for attending. I did have Shannon send out some of the documentation. This is the same stuff I believe I sent you previously. And I'm going to go ahead and share my screen right now. And hopefully you can all see it there. I can see it popping up. That's pretty cool. Looks like we've got some new technology in the meeting room. And I guess I'll check that out next month. So I think as we emailed you previously, Ross, there had been quite a bit of work done by Eric Alimo and a previous DEEB member, Steve Bacon, in concert with the Parks Advisory Board to look at the possibility of using private development projects that oftentimes have a recreational component associated with it, whether that be a pocket park or trails or something along those lines, and looking to see if there's an opportunity for reduction in the PIF. And just a little bit of history with this. DEEB was presented with an update, the PIF update, several years ago, 2018, 2019, somewhere around in there. And they hadn't updated the PIF for quite a while. And what we found was the PIF increase was not only significant, but quite unreal. And so when we asked staff about why the PIF increase was so much, they gave a really good presentation on, kind of a breakdown as far as how the PIFs are calculated. Based on primarily it was acquisition costs of land in order to even procure the land for a park, let alone develop it. And we had a little bit of back and forth about, a lot of the private development that we work with, those people that purchase the properties were finding that they felt that the prices that the county were paying was significantly more than what they might pay for a similar size piece of property. And Eric, feel free to chime in here if I get off base or anything. I'm trying to, think back 5 years or so and 6 years and 7 years. And realize that that significant an increase was going to have a big impact on home building, whether that be single family or multifamily, moving forward in the county. And then we kind of really pressed them on, so why is there such a deficit in the county with regards to parkland, as mandated through GMA and the parks plan itself, and that they had just fallen behind. We did note that they were not including any schools as part of the inventory. That there are parks at schools. I live right next to Jason Lee and Columbia or Eisenhower Elementary School. Both of them have parks. And a lot of the other elementary and junior high school, or I'm sorry, middle schools have parks as well, but they weren't included in that. And so we kind of pressed them to, you know, reevaluate the inventory based on that. Secondarily, we looked at how we can, as how the development community can partner with parks in order to reduce this inventory. And kind of as a quid pro quo, look at the possibility of a reduction in the PIF for single and multifamily projects. What I'm presenting right now is kind of a summary of what was presented. And Eric, was this presented to Planning Commission or Council?
It was presented to Council. We had a subcommittee after the traffic impact fees were raised significantly, and it was something like between 250 and 300% was the raise. It was very significant, and the council reluctantly approved it with a caveat that we work with the park board, that Deeb works with the park board to come up with some solutions and more efficiencies, I guess, and kind of meeting the goals. And they mentioned doing things like credits, you know, TIF or PIF credits for dedications in private parks, counting more areas. One thing that we noticed in the plan was that the statement that there's 60% of the national standard is currently not being met. But the one thing that we found as we were reviewing it is the only thing they were counting towards that was neighborhood parks. So if you add in the other facilities, things like parks associated with schools, open space greenway facilities, trail complexes, special facilities, sports fields, all of those things is a significant amount of acreage that wasn't being counted towards that 60% goal of the national standard. So when you add all those in, we're a lot closer to meeting those goals than we thought. So, you know, we formed this group at council's request to meet with the park board. We held quite a few meetings. And then what you have here is kind of the recommendations that came out of those meetings. And then COVID happened and it kind of just stopped. We stopped meeting. None of these really got implemented. So the idea was that we bring this back to the forefront. We meet with I don't know if we need to meet with the parks board anymore. I think we're kind of past that, but we need to look at meeting with staff in the parks department to implement some of these recommendations and hopefully come up with a solution. The idea was that through efficiencies, the park impact fees may be able to be reduced based on some of the calculations, counting different areas, and also applying things like credits for dedications and open space dedications. So that's kind of where we left off.
Perfect.
And that's what brings us to here.
Great. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate that. I'm just going to run through this real quick for the benefit of others that are online. We had some deep recommendations that to use the joint areas associated with schools and to provide recreational opportunities to the community should count towards the parks plan. That was one of those items that was identified. Again, this is those greenways that in the larger facilities that Eric was alluding to that aren't, it's a lot of acreage there that's not, you know, going towards that. And all this plays into the cost of acquisition to get to where you need to, which is calculates into the ultimate PIF. If all of these facilities had at one time been calculated into that PIF calculation, the PIF would have been a lot lower. We may not even be here today. Maybe we would. But we didn't get a clear reason why these facilities weren't included in the calculation of the PIF. You know, we talked about providing a balance between the recreational opportunities. And again, this all goes towards affordable housing. The greater the impact from a school or a transportation or a park impact fee is, it's going to be passed along to the consumer. And already, a lot of the a lot of our clients, a lot of the private developers out there that do multi single family housing developments, they provide some kind of recreational facility in there, whether it be a pocket park or trails or in, as far as multifamily is concerned, that's a little different because that's oftentimes a private thing. But there are oftentimes, you know, critical areas that they would look at putting in a trail system in. I know that take a look at Ridgefield's trail plan. That's one of those things that is on the books and is, you know, part of development. The Parks Board had recommendations to increase the goals for the level of service. And again, the 60% of the national standard, whether we're at that still or not, this has been now 7 years-ish since we've been discussing this. Some joint recommendations would be to look into developing the smaller innovative parks within private developments, apply for credits based on standards, maybe a two-tier credit system based on the extent of the recreational facility that's developed as part of a private development. Collaborate more with the parks development and their land purchases. And as and then, you know, if we look at the trails, it, you know, a lot of people are really pushing for you know, a unified trail system. I know that the county has one. Private development and these trails kind of stop at a piece of property. They can be extended to the benefit of not only the general public, but also the developer and the eventual home purchaser with the lower PIF rates. That's pretty much it. I'll stop sharing now. The last time this came before Deeb with your predecessor, we had this discussion. And I believe, Eric and others, correct me, but the discussion focused around, we don't have any development standards. We don't have any guidelines as far as what these facilities would look like, what elements would they contain, what is it that constitutes a recreational facility or a park or a trail or whatever. It has to be to a certain level of development. Now, I've done enough research into the parks plan, and I know that there are several different levels of development. There's undeveloped, there's, you know, a tier one or whatever it's called now that might have, you know, just some basic elements to it. And then it goes up to, you know, where you have bathroom facilities, you have irrigation, and so on. And then you get up to these larger, more regional facilities that aren't even counted in the inventory. And so I think that there's a couple of things that we'd like to discuss with you. Number one is whether what is it that is preventing the Parks Department from including other recreational facilities that are not included currently in the inventory, meaning school park facilities, regional facilities, and such that we've talked about. Number two, how can we establish some guidelines, development standards, and whatever in order for private development to be able to now start looking at the possibility of getting PIF credits associated with the development of recreational facilities within their private development. I've said a lot. I'll let you speak to anything that you want to or ask any questions of us that you might have.
No, that's great. Thank you. I really appreciate that overview and background. Super helpful. I'm Ross Hoover. I'm the manager of the Parks and Nature Division here with the county, and grateful to have an opportunity to come chat with you. And pretty cool that I'm on two TVs at the same time. pretty fun. Now, that was very informative. Great to know the background and kind of the history of this process. As I have been here for about 3 months now, soaking everything in, learning, what's clear to me is that there's a lot of passion for parks. There's a lot of passion for trails. Everyone understands the benefits of parks They're really crucial and vital to the future of Clark County. And as you're, I'm sure, all aware, the projections for growth within the county are tremendous. We will pass Spokane County in the not too distant future in terms of population. That leaves us as the third largest county in the state behind King's Snohomish. So we have exciting things going on here. And crucial to that are parks, natural areas, open spaces, and trails. One thing that's apparent to me is that the work that has been done in the past will not get us to the future. So the park system plan that we have in place currently, we are scheduled to begin the process to update that plan beginning in 26. So that process will start in 26. The plan is very informative. It collected a lot of feedback from the community, but it's not complete. One element that's really lacking within their current existing plan is we don't have a comprehensive system-wide trails plan. And as we already heard, trails are really crucial. People want to use trails to get around off right of way, connecting parks, connecting natural areas, connecting developments. They're absolutely crucial. So we're going to weave that into that update. So that's a quick overview. Another part of that update that's crucial is what you all have alluded to already. And a lot of the conversation so far and the work that's been done is really about parks impact fees. And our current parks impact fee rate, how it's calculated, is dependent upon really a robust, comprehensive parks impact fee methodology update that needs to happen. The existing methodology is based upon a level of service that is calculated using acres per thousand residents, and that calculation has served communities well for a lot of years, for decades, really. But we need to catch up in terms of our practices and how we're calculating our level of service. And I think you brought up some really good questions as to how that methodology is and what's contained in that methodology. The work that's been done by this committee and PAB in the past, it looks like it was completed in 2019 or up to a certain point in 2019. And quite honestly, frankly, that was we're in a completely new paradigm now. Post-COVID world is different, and our understanding of the park system has evolved and grown. That's great that the work that's been done. I think it's going to be really informative as we jump into the parks impact fee methodology update and system plan update. However, I think there is a new reality in terms of the usage of parks and how people are using their parks. I think since COVID or when this last work was done in 2019, Vancouver, Clark County has really changed. The pace of growth has changed. The development that's happening, as you're all aware, throughout the county has changed. We are growing up, and in order to meet the future need and demand from a parks and trails perspective, we've got some work to do ahead of us. I think your committee is going to be crucial in that future and envisioning that future that's in the system plan. I'm just looking forward to that future work. Not to ignore your questions, specific questions, but we're in a different paradigm now, and the work that was done in 19 pre-COVID quite honestly is outdated now, and we need to do that system planning and methodology update work, which really is the work that you and the questions that you have. So as you look at the park system throughout Clark County, if you look within the urban growth boundary, a lot of the parks are neighborhood parks. They are small parks that serve a specific area. And that's typical. That's the type of park you would see within an urban growth boundary. The remainder of the county are large, as you mentioned, are large open spaces, natural areas, trails, and regional and community parks. And so what we will see over time is as the city of Vancouver annexes north over time, those neighborhood parks, typically throughout the country, the parks are transitioned to the city over time. And as the city annexes north, I think we'll see and we'll work with the city closely to figure out how that works and what that process looks like. That has yet to be developed, and we're excited to begin that work with the city of Vancouver. Additionally, I will add, if you were at the work session at council this week, you heard or it was alluded to that the parks division is in a structural budget deficit and a projected deficit that will continue to grow over time. And so there needs to be a conversation countywide about how we want to meet our parks needs from a county perspective. And in partnership with our surrounding cities, that we have an obligation to meet the needs of folks who live in city limits and folks who live in the county, in the unincorporated areas. And that the two types of systems are typically different, as I mentioned earlier. So we're excited to begin that conversation about what the future looks like, what the needs are, how we get there from a funding perspective. Certainly, parks impact fees are part of that discussion. But I don't have any answers for you yet because it really is dependent upon what our community members want and what they need. So that engagement will begin in 26. I hope that was not too high level. I wasn't able to answer your questions because I don't know the answers at this point.
Right. And I think more importantly, Ross, is that when you do revisit the parks plan and that you include and have as an integral part of that the opportunities for public-private partnerships in order to get to where we collectively as a county need to be. I think that there's been some opportunities lost in that regard. If you know, there's a lot of development going on in Clark County right now that everybody knows. And while, you know, a lot of developers, you know, the bottom line is to maximize profits, that's not all it. There are other opportunities that they would, I'm sure, be looking for if there's an opportunity to reduce the impact of the cost of a home on the general public, particularly in, you know, we've got a wide variety of densities out there of different styles, townhomes, single family detached, duplexes, triplexes, cottage, all of those different styles of homes, that it might be more palatable for the development community to want to partner, especially if they can see a realized reduction in what it's going to cost them from an impact fee standpoint. There's a lot of critical areas out there that if done correctly can also serve as recreational facilities. I think of Whipple Creek Park and that the question would be, is Whipple Creek Park included in the current inventory? It's acres. I've been there dozens of times. You walk around, you got a number of different trails. It's used by horseback riders. And I just want to make sure, and I think collectively we want to make sure that number one, the inventory is being counted correctly. And correctly by what I mean is not cherry picking what is included and what isn't included in order to raise that percentage. But to also take a look at what are the opportunities moving forward as part of the parks plan redo, to be able to get that public-private partnership involved. In the other jurisdictions that I've worked in, where this is an opportunity between public and private partnerships to get PIF credits, I would encourage you and others to look at those other jurisdictions to see how they do it. They do have standards, development standards for different levels of parks. And that if a development proposes an area of X size with Y elements to it, they should have that helps everyone. The other part of that is that it can be done a lot cheaper from the private side than it can the public side. The development of a park, I've developed a dozen or more parks in Clark County just myself, these small pocket parks, or designed them rather, not developed them. And, they can really be done, and they're a great amenity to the neighborhood in which they're going to be included in. So I think that where we're at now is just to encourage it. And I think the Deeb would want to be actively involved in the parks update so that we can play an active role in including some of these elements in the park update so that they don't get lost. So that we have and can find the most opportunity available to us. We're coming to you already having done quite a bit of work, kind of just handing it to you and saying, hey, we've already worked with the Parks Advisory Board. We've already talked to council. It's not this council, but it was prior council that said, hey, yeah, I mean, this leaves a bad taste in our mouth, and we understand why we have to raise the PIF to what we do. But now it's maybe time to look outside the box. You mentioned a paradigm shift that's taken place. Great. Let's be part of that.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I'm curious, does the city of Vancouver offer impact fee credits for development on site?
I don't know.
Okay.
That would be a good question for them. I don't.
Mike, I can answer that question.
Yeah, who's that?
The city of Vancouver, I'm actively working on a project right now to where we are entering into a developer's agreement to be able to get developers credits, if you will.
Good. Good.
I know the city of Camas does. And I'm not sure Ridgefield does, but I mean they have a pretty comprehensive parks and trails plan, so that there might be some opportunity there. I know that they have it as a development requirement. I don't know as if it necessarily translates into credits based on a level of development.
Right.
I've got two questions for Ross, if now's the right time to ask.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I heard you say that the info that was just presented and the recommendations from our joint committee with the Parks Advisory Board was out of date. And yep. What I feel, do you have which pieces of that are out of date? Because I read through them again, and they look more applicable than ever. Maybe more important to look at some of those recommendations than before. So which ones exactly do you feel are no longer applicable or out of date?
So, like I said, what that study and what that cooperation points to is the need for a methodology update. And so, through a methodology update, you're looking at the inventory, the current inventory, right, and looking at your standard level of service. Well, that was 6 years ago. There's a different inventory of parks. There are new lands acquired. There are new parks that are developed. And most importantly, this was pre-COVID when this conversation happened. So the needs of the community have fundamentally shifted since before COVID. People have different patterns and needs in their daily lives. And so that's what I mean, kind of those two elements is what I mean by outdated. I think it's important work. I think it's very informative for the next steps.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that the work that was put in and all the meetings we had and all the work that went into this is not just dismissed, because there's a lot of pieces in there that really do apply to exactly what you're saying and are probably more important after COVID. And we also have to be responsible with the budget shortfall that you just said. And if there's ways we can do it more efficiently, we should do it. The other piece to it is, things have changed in other ways too. Housing affordability in this state is at an all-time low, basically. And when you look at trying to fund parks with impact fees that drive costs of housing even higher, those are things we have to consider as well. We really need to balance those things. And development may also be slowing in the county, where we're really not building as many. We don't anticipate building as many new homes. We're going to have more density, so that probably increases the need for parks. And also we need to look at what types of parks are used. And right now, in that calculation that we had before, these smaller pocket parks that serve those apartment complexes and multifamily are not counted in that model right now. So again, those are probably more important to look at and make sure they are in the model and look at how we're meeting those goals and the needs of the community and make sure we're counting everything that should be counted. Also, a lot of these developments, the multifamily developments are privately built, and if the parks can be done with them to serve their developments, there should be a system set up to make sure that there's credits for that. And those can then go into the parks inventory and meeting a community need, whether it's, you know, public or private. As long as it's open to the public, it's meeting that public need. And even ones that are purely private, they take the load off of the need for some of the other public parks that serve the same community. So I don't know. I looked at these and I don't see any of them that are really out of date. I'd love to see them at least considered and incorporated into the updated plan.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's really informative, and it's an important step in the process. When we go through the process of updating our system plan, we'll have updated inventory of what our park system looks like now as opposed to 2019. We'll take into account people's hopes, dreams, desires for parks throughout the county. And as we draft that plan, absolutely everybody in the county is a part of that. And we're encouraging as many people to be involved as possible. And so that past report, I think it'll be really informative. And as we jump into the next phase, which is the methodology update, we'll have those conversations about level of service and what the right calculation is, or what the right methodology is for calculating our level of service.
My last question was, you mentioned the structural deficit.
Yep.
How do you anticipate addressing that as this process progresses?
So that's a great question. We will be presenting to council at a work session and looking for guidance from council on how we should approach this question. So I can't answer that yet. That's really a question for council.
Any other questions for Ross from the D members? Well, thanks for attending today, Ross. You've heard us, hopefully loud and clear. Don't hesitate to reach out to us. We'd like to be actively involved as you move forward with the parks updates. As a landscape architect, as someone who's designed parks for the last, you know, quarter century, it's certainly something that I've been interested in. I know that a lot of the developers out there actively seek to include recreational facilities in their developments. And I think that you'll find that there will be a lot of willing people to, you know, help you out as any way, shape or form that they can in, you know, coming up, addressing the deficit, not only from a funding standpoint, but from a facility standpoint as well. So as you move forward, we'll probably ask you to come back once you have new information or whatever and present to us, and we'll just kind of take it from there. Usually in these situations, we have some kind of, small group committee that, you know, works actively with you guys, at least on a workshop or two to sit down and kind of discuss some of these things. I know that you've only been around for 3 months and just kind of getting your feet wet, but as you kind of get into this a little bit further, please let us know when that opportunity might be good for us to engage again.
Absolutely. I appreciate the time today and thank you all. And we're excited about the future. I think it's going to be a fantastic place for people to live and work, and parks are going to be a key part of that in the future. So I'm excited and looking forward to working with all of you.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda are the stormwater code and manual proposed updates. Trista, sounds like that's going to be you, or
it's me. Devin, oh, okay. Or Rod might want to start as their county employees, and I'm a consultant, but if not, I can just jump in.
Hi, thank you for that, Trista. For the record, my name is Devin Rostfer. I'm the Clean Water Division Manager. You've been hearing from us quite regularly over the last probably 6 months or even potentially more on the Stormwater Code and Manual update. And so as a part of this process, there are we have a requirement to submit our significant changes to Department of Ecology by June of 2026. Correct me if I'm wrong on that deadline. 25, sorry. We have to submit them this year, so we're about 4 months away from our submission date, and we would like to go through some of those substantial changes. Oops.
Oh. Are you handing it off to me, Devin? Or to me, Devin is frozen. Can anyone hear me? I wonder if I'm the one who's frozen.
Krista, I can hear you.
You can hear me? Yeah, okay. All right. Maybe Devin is frozen. Okay. I will share my screen. Just give me, hold on one moment, please. Okay. Can everyone see that presentation?
Yes.
Okay. Wonderful. So I think Devin got cut off, but I'm Trista Kobleski, and I'm a stormwater planner at OTAC. And Deeb has heard from me before, as Devin mentioned. So we, OTAC is helping the county update its stormwater code and manual in response to the latest phase one municipal stormwater permit. Oh, hi, Devin, you're back.
I'm so sorry. My computer froze and closed me out of the meeting. So where I was at is we're here today to provide an overview of our requested changes and needing to meet the regulatory deadline of submitting those to Ecology by this summer, which they'll then review and come back to us on whether or not they approve those changes. But as a part of our process, we've been committed to coming to you to provide you with updates as well as to get your feedback and input. So I think we have limited time today, so I'll pass it off to Trista to go into the details.
Okay, thanks, Devin. So again, I'm Trista Kobleski. I'm a stormwater planner with OTAC, and we're here to talk about, yet again, about the Clark County Stormwater Code and Manual update. And our topic for today is what I'm calling batch one of some of the requested changes that have come in from Clark County staff and the community, particularly Deeb. So it's batch one because overall we have 100 approximately requests for updates or changes to the stormwater manual or the associated Clark County codes, namely Title 40, Chapter 386, Stormwater and Erosion Control. So we're batching those to discuss with you. I'll let you know some of them are minor and we won't have a meeting like this in which we discuss them. So we're only bringing to you the ones that are maybe a little more worthy of a discussion and may generate feedback. You will have a chance to look at all of the changes that the county may propose before they get adopted, but we're only going to face-to-face discuss some of the ones that are, like I said, a little more meaty. So what we are going to do today is a quick project review and then discuss batch one of the county and community requested changes, and then we'll review our next steps. So project overview, if you haven't heard this before or don't remember, Clark County has a municipal stormwater permit issued by Department of Ecology under both the Federal Clean Water Act and the state's Water Pollution Control Law. And the permit was reissued this past year for a five-year term. And as usual, one of the significant requirements in an update of the stormwater permit is for Clark County to update its stormwater codes for development and redevelopment. The permit has a number of requirements that are mandated, and the county is also taking this opportunity and assessing requests from the community to make other improvements to the code and manual. But we are in the midst of that process right now. So what we are going to look at today are some changes that would impact Title 40.386 and the Clark County Stormwater Manual Books 1 and Book 2. And it's a small set of changes that may result in discussion. I will say that we've already presented to Deeb the list of mandated changes that Ecology included in Appendix 10 of the permit and gave you a chance to comment on those. And we didn't really have comments on those. So we are moving on to these requested changes by updates by staff and Deeb. And it is our intent today to solicit feedback on the proposed updates that you will hear. This is a little bit in contrast to the mandated changes that we presented to Deeb earlier, because those are directly contained in the permit. Clark County doesn't feel that there is very much latitude in making those changes. By contrast, these changes, again, are requests from staff and the community, so they are definitely something we'd like your input on. After this meeting, we'll send you this list of changes that we're going to show you today so that you have a chance to review them more closely and spend some time with them before you provide your input. We're also happy to take questions or discuss about them today within the time that we have established. All right. So I'm actually going to open a separate document, which is a table that has four changes. I'm sorry, my little, the sharing thing is always in the way. So, okay. For those of you who are familiar with the Clark County Stormwater Manual, it's in four books. We've also got Title 40.386. So in this table, the book reference is in this column. What section it's in is in this column. We're going to talk about what the change was that was requested. We have here what the current language is, some proposed replacement language, and an explanation. So we'll talk about all of these things today. And again, feel free to maybe ask questions on each one as we go through. I won't be able to see your hands raised. So I don't know, Mike, as the chair, if you are wanting to keep track of that and let me know that people want to speak, that would be, would that be okay?
If I can see them, I will certainly let you know.
Okay.
So thank you. We'll see how it plays out.
I appreciate that. Okay.
Do we have copies of this? And I know they're not in our packet, but were they distributed previously?
I will send them out right after this. I do apologize for that. I've had a family medical emergency this week that prevented me from getting these out to you in advance. So what we'd like to do is present them today and then send them to you soon after this meeting as we can, as soon as Shannon can get them out to you, and then give you a couple of weeks to look them over. So think of this as your introduction, and then we'll give you time to look them over. Okay, so in Book 1, Section 1.3, which is definitions related to the minimum requirements, The commenter has requested that building demolition be added to the definition of land disturbing activities. And the purpose for that really is to ensure that demolition has construction stormwater pollution prevention applied and potentially source control. Those are minimum requirements number 2 and number 3 in the manual. The commenter says there may be some sort of threshold and that the purpose is really to prevent PCBs, which is it's not a new contaminant, but the concern for the contaminant at Department of Ecology and in their permits is increasing. So we're calling it a pollutant of concern, and a rising pollutant of concern, that PCBs not be discharged via stormwater into the environment. So the current language that we have is the definition of land disturbing activity in that section 1.3. You could read it here. Many of you are probably familiar with it, but any activity that results in a change in the existing soil cover, both vegetative and non, and or the existing soil topography. And then there's a list of activities it includes, but is not limited to clearing, grading, filling, and excavation. Compaction that is associated with stabilization of structures and road construction is also considered a land disturbing activity. And then a list of things that are not, which includes vegetation management practices, landscape maintenance and gardening. Stormwater facility maintenance is not land disturbing if conducted and according to the established standards and procedures. And as part of that, we'll note that demolition is mentioned in Book 1 in relation to construction stormwater pollution prevention. So the proposal is actually not to update anything in the Clark County Stormwater Manual, but to update the county's interpretation of land disturbing activity and potentially update county processes, permits, and or forms. And the explanation for that is that land disturbing activity can be interpreted to include demolition without a change in the definition. And there are other jurisdictions that clearly interpret it that way. Their demolition permits and language include requirements to control erosion and sedimentation on demolition sites. And so the suggestion is that Clark County can interpret land disturbing activity in this same way and incorporate construction stormwater pollution prevention requirements in their demolition permits, and that this could be achieved through the intergovernment or the agreement between Public Works Clean Water Division and Community Development. So that is the suggested or proposed course of action for that comment that has been submitted. Any comments on that one? And again, you will have a couple of weeks to look at these after this meeting as well.
Trista, I might suggest that you go ahead and review these. We're a little short of time, and yep. I want you to have the opportunity to get through them all. So I'm going to suggest that we hold all our questions until you send this out to everyone, and then they can respond at that time.
Perfect. Great. Do you want me to end at 3, Mike? Is that?
No.
Okay.
Not necessarily. We do have one other agenda item. You know, you have probably another at least 15 minutes okay. that you can go. We do have something else to discuss. We have to end the meeting at 3:30, and I would like to have an opportunity to for public comment as well.
Absolutely. I will go through these. There are only 4 of them in this batch, so
okay,
we'll run through them at about the same pace and then save discussion for after folks have had a chance to look.
Yeah, and if we have time after you've presented, they can ask the questions then as well, too.
Great.
Okay,
thank you. The second one we're going to look at right now is a comment related to Book 1, Section 1.6.3, and Title 40.386. The commenter said there used to be a prohibition in code about concentrating flow onto adjacent properties, and it seems to have been lost in the 2015 manual update. Now, 2015, for those of you who may not have been around at that time, was the first time Clark County published its own stormwater, independent stormwater manual. We did look at Book 1, Section 1.6.3, and it does have language that describes that prohibition of concentrating stormwater runoff onto adjacent properties and a prohibition against blocking existing drainage from adjacent lots. We thought what we could do is make that a little more obvious by moving it up in Section 1.6.3 and changing the grammar a little bit to make the prohibition clearer. And our other suggestion for this is that we add it back to Title 40.386, Section 20, Standards for Stormwater Control, as Item E. In the best of our memory, this prohibition did used to be in Title 40, and it may have, while it remained in the manual, it may have been in 2015 or thereabouts that the prohibition was removed from Title 40. So the suggestion is to strengthen the language in Book 1 and reinsert that prohibition into Title 40. All right, and we will move on to the next page. This again is in Book 1, Section 3.2.1. Which is Section 3 or Chapter 3 is stormwater treatment or runoff treatment. And Figure 3.1 is a flowchart that leads applicants to select a treatment BMP if they trigger minimum requirement 6, which is runoff treatment. And currently, if infiltration is used as a treatment BMP, a pre-settling basin or other pretreatment facility is required to be before the UIC or the infiltration BMP when it's used for treatment. And I just wanted to clarify that what the commenter is asking for here, and this has been determined after discussion, that the commenter is requesting basic treatment to be required in front of all underground injection controls. And that includes dry wells and infiltration trenches if they have a perforated pipe. So the current language allows a pre-settling basin before infiltration that's used as treatment. There are other sections and language that allow pre-treatment or pre-settling in front of UICs, and those haven't been identified here in this column right now. So this is more of a policy proposal at the moment. The language change would be in Figure 3.1 and elsewhere in the Clark County Code. But the proposal would be in the explanation now. The proposal would be for the county to require basic treatment, a basic treatment BMP, in front of any UIC, which again includes dry wells or underground infiltration trenches that have a perforated pipe, if they are owned and operated by Clark County or owned and operated by a homeowners association. And the purpose for this requested change or proposed change is to protect those UICs from fouling, from sediment, so that they continue to function and maintain their function for as long as possible. So that is a proposal which would change the language in Figure 3.1 and anywhere else in the Clark County Stormwater Manual yet to be determined where pre-settling is allowed before a UIC if it would be owned by Clark County or a homeowners association. So that's our third one that we're going to talked about today. And then the fourth one is in a comment that's regarding Book 1, section 6.4.3. Chapter 6 is construction, stormwater pollution prevention. And book 2, the design guidance for BMP C241, which is a temporary sediment pond. And the requester has mentioned that the information or the design guidance for sizing the temporary pond is in BMP C241 in book 2. And the commenter thinks that the guidance contradicts the requirement from section book 1, section 6.4.3, specifically in the 6.4.3, element number 3 requires that construction site stormwater discharges shall not exceed the discharge duration of the pre-developed condition for the range of pre-developed discharge rates from 1/2 of the 2-year flow through the 10-year flow as predicted by an approved continuous model. And the commenter would like this language to be removed from book 1, 6.4.3, because it feels it is in conflict with the design guidance in BMP C241 temporary sediment pond. And with the discussion, we have consulted with a number of engineers about this concern, and the discussion has resulted in a proposal. Well, the thought that the guidance is not in conflict, but that meeting this requirement is only for those sites that trigger minimum requirement number 7, which is flow control. And some of the other design guidance in BMP C241 would be applicable to other sites that are controlling erosion on their construction sites, but not necessarily triggering minimum requirement 7, and that the design guidance is valid. And that those sites that do trigger minimum requirement 7, the proposal is to add some instructions in BMP C241 that matches this language, stating if a site triggers minimum requirement 7, the construction site stormwater discharges shall not exceed that discharge duration, the same language that we already discussed using a continuous simulation model. So that is the proposal to address this comment. And this comment did come in from Deeb. So I imagine we would have discussion on that or feedback on that one in particular. And those are the 4 that we were ready to talk about today. So I can stop talking now.
Thanks, Trista. Does anybody have any questions for her? We do have some time left.
I do, Mike. It's April.
Oh, go for it.
On the first one, you said that other jurisdictions have interpreted building demo as land disturbing activity. I would just ask that, are there other jurisdictions that have interpreted building demo as not land disturbing activity? So basically, it can go either way.
Good question. I would have to research that so I can we can look into that.
Yeah, one of the things with regard to the comments, it's a little bit tough to be able to read the explanations here in the meeting room. So I think more of the questions will come when we have that opportunity to actually see those closer. So,
yeah. Agreed.
Anything else for Trista or Devin?
If I could just, I'll say what our next steps are.
Oh, sure.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
I shouldn't have stopped talking before saying that. We will, again, send these to you and give you 2 weeks to look them over. We are planning to come back at your next meeting in March with actually, we could follow up on this, but we will definitely have another topic, infiltration policy assessment topic, which is still Clark County Stormwater Manual related updates. So this is a group of hopeful improvements to the clarity of how infiltration, the geotechnical requirements for sites that use infiltration are either written or enforced. So that is a topic we will be talking to Deeb about, hopefully getting on the agenda in March. And we could potentially continue the discussion, if there's enough time on the agenda, of these, this batch one updates, as well as our follow-up. And as Devin said, we are working toward that June deadline of submitting all changes to the Clark County Manual in Title 40.386 that might be considered significant in terms of interpreting Appendix 1 of the permit.
Great. Thanks, Trista. Victoria, I don't know as if we have anything on our March agenda. And so that's usually something that we kind of discuss over email, but I'd like to give Devin and Trista a little more time, maybe 45 minutes at the next meeting. Give them a half an hour, right on schedule, by the way. We are hitting every single agenda item exactly as it was spelled out as far as time's concerned today. That never happens. But I also want to allow you enough time to present and allow any of the D members enough time to have any questions. They'll probably have questions going forward, but I would encourage them, and I'll get copies of this as well. I'll pass this around our engineering department to see if they have any comments and try to get those over to you as well within the next. So you'll be sending this out, what, tomorrow or something?
It can go out as soon as today, if I can coordinate with Victoria.
But you'd like any comments back within the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think I said the Friday, Friday, February 21st.
Okay.
So two weeks and a day.
If you could indicate that in your email out, and then Victoria can just forward that to the rest of the DEEB members. Yeah. And that way I can just forward that on to staff at our firm, and others can do that at their firms. And that way everybody's on the same page. We can get you back comments as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Thanks Great. For your time, everyone.
Yes. Thank you, Devin. Thank you, Trista.
Thank you.
The next item I'd like to add is a discussion as far as number one, a follow-up to those who have applied as the either construction contractor or at-large development work. We have two open positions, I believe, depending on who is actually applying. One is a private development, and the other one is the public sector board seat. And so do you have, Victoria, an update as to who has applied for the open private position that I believe is appointed by the county manager?
So I spoke with Michelle prior to this meeting to get an update on where they were, where the process is, and she mentioned that she was waiting on a letter of recommendation from Deeb to send to Kathleen for the board members. And in reading the bylaws, the language kind of got a little confusing for me. So I would like to actually confirm that before I go back to Michelle.
Okay.
We have done that in the past.
Yeah, I think when we did this in the past, the names were presented in the meeting. We limited discussion, sent them out an email, and then we collectively put in a recommendation via email to you, Victoria, that then was shared.
Okay, perfect. So do you all just need a list of all the members that have applied?
Yes. Okay. Apparently, Sherry, is that correct?
Yes. So if you have the list, you can just share the names in the meeting so that's on the record, and then we have discussion and put one forward written to Michelle to put forward to this county manager.
I do not have the list directly in front of me, but I can get that together. All the recommendation letters were sent out at different times, and I know that Michelle also has one extra letter of recommendation that I did not see yet.
Okay, so it's still an ongoing process then.
Yes.
Okay. Sherry, do you feel that this is something that we can that can be done outside of the meetings off the record, or should it be done in a public forum?
You guys can correct me if memory serves me right. When we did this before, we simply either nominated people that we were going to reach out to or presented a list that had already applied. Mm-hmm. And then the discussion about the individual candidates happened off the record.
Okay. Well, if that's what it sounds like, then we don't have the names today. The terms are usually, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they start in May. Or are they, or is it just whenever they're?
It was whenever they were originally appointed.
Okay.
So I think they stagger, like mine is July. I think Eric's just renewed.
Okay.
I think it's just when the position comes open.
What is the downside to having this as our first agenda item in March?
We just have another month of open seats and another month where candidates or applicants don't hear back anything. Is there a way, Victoria, that we can at least notify them that we're still in the process so they're not just waiting and wondering?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, so I might suggest that if that is the case and we can keep them engaged and let them know that they are still being considered, that we have this as our next agenda item at our next meeting. And that hopefully by then we can get somebody on board by April.
Hey, Mike, I think in the past that wasn't it, they had to be applied and there was a specific date which that it was there was no longer you had to apply prior to, and then once those were all those applications were collected, then those names were given to the DEEB to consider and make a recommendation.
Yes, and I believe the application window's already closed and mm-hmm. has been.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just not sure. I'm just not clear as to whether our bylaws speak to whether or not our discussion or presentation of the names. I don't remember in the past a list of names being mentioned during one of our regular meetings.
We've done it by email in the past.
I thought
so it wasn't done in our normal meeting. It was done behind the scenes. So,
okay.
Okay. So, thank you for clarifying. I think we created a list of names that we were reaching out to, perhaps was what I'm remembering.
Yes. And that's going to be the next thing that we talk about. So, Victoria, if you could just email us the list of those from the private side that can send those out to the board members, and we can correspond via email. And that will check that box. And then the next question is, have we had any applicants from the public sector for the public sector open seat that you know of?
I have to get clarification from Michelle. She did mention there was someone by the name of Brandon, but I am not sure what position he was soliciting interest in.
Okay. So since we don't know that, I would like to, at this time, since we have the private seat handled and we can discuss those applicants via email, I'd like to now have a discussion about those that we discussed at our last meeting, and Victoria prepared a list for us. Those people being Les McDonald, Michelle Henry, Mike Bomar, Brian Snodgrass, Greg Turner, Claire Lust, Steve Stewart, Angie Merrill, and Shanna Lazzarini. I trust that all the members know who they are and what agency they are with. I think that having had Steve Bacon on was very helpful with regards to getting updates on sewer plans. He brought a different view to this. I'm a little hesitant. This is just me speaking. A little hesitant to have someone from a different jurisdiction per se. Only because that Clark County is not where their interest lies. They're focused on their own jurisdiction. Again, Shanna's with Ridgefield, Angie's with La Center, Claire's with Ridgefield, Greg's with Vancouver, Brian's with Vancouver. And so I would lobby for someone like Les or Michelle Henry with CPU, as someone that we reach out to see if they would be interested in applying. And this is the time that everybody else has an opportunity to share their opinion.
Mike, I would add that Les was top of the list when we had this discussion before.
That is correct. You're absolutely right. And I just want to make sure that, and he wasn't chosen. Again, I believe the county manager has the ultimate decision in this regard. They do need to apply. I don't want to waste anybody's time. And this is what we discussed last time. I don't want anybody to waste their time applying, or multiple people applying, especially Les, and that he's not picked. Has anybody spoken with him at all? I mean, Terry's not here. He had the closest relationship with him as far as gauging interest. Hearing none, sounds like that's the case. If we're all in agreement that Les was top of the list last time, I don't know him. I think Terry does. Does anybody else know him that could reach out to him and ask him if he'd be willing to apply again? Crickets? Okay. Let me reach out to Terry. I think Terry's the one that recommended him previously. Or Dan, do you know him?
I've talked to him a couple times, Mike, and I've in active discussion with him right now over some sewer issues. So I'll try and buzz him. I'll talk to Terry, see if he is going to talk to him. And then if he hasn't, I'll talk to him. Okay.
That would be great. Yeah. If you could just touch base with Terry, see who the best would be. And then let's try to get this put to bed. We'd like him to be on board. I'd like to meet him. I've heard a lot about him. Steve has only good things to say about him as he took over his position at Clark Regional. So, okay. Thank you. I think that pretty much sums up our agenda for today. Next item is public comment. We have 10 minutes or 8 minutes. Is there anybody either in the room or on the line that has anything for the good of the order?
I have a comment. This is okay. Brandon Erickson. If now is a good time for me to share a comment. So I am one of the applicants for DEEB, and I'm not sure if my application was classified as public or private, but I am owner and principal of Erickson Structural Consulting Engineers. One comment I'll make, I am a member of the Parks Advisory Board. And so in the context of the discussion we just heard from Mr. Hoover, one benefit that I think I could bring to DEEB is being a liaison between these two groups and participating in both of them. In the process of become a member of the Parks Advisory Board. I did meet with many of the advisory board members. And if that is an opportunity, or if there are members of DEEB who would be interested in getting to know me better in the process of making a decision recommendation, I'd be more than happy to make myself available for that.
Great. Thank you. I'm sorry, I did not catch your name.
Brandon Erickson.
Brandon Erickson. Okay.
Yes.
Great. Thanks for coming today and letting us know and introducing yourself. Appreciate it. Teresa, you did have your hand up. Go for it.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Just a couple things. One, in going back to when the PIF fees were brought before council, which was a while ago, it does seem that one of the reasons for bringing it forward was because they did look at, I think, matching with surrounding counties of equal population, and our fees were considerably lower, so they were trying to get our fees raised so we'd be more comparable. And the discussion was, how would they do that over a period of time? So, and the question is, are our PIF fees now comparable with other counties our size? The next one is, the National Recreation and Parks does have a standards and a metrics, and it is based upon amount of space per 1,000 residents, and it also is based upon neighborhood, community, and regional parks and how far they are for people to have accessibility. And I think neighborhood is like 15 minutes and maybe community is 30 minutes, so there's walking ability. And then that does bring in the issue of multifamily housing and increased density. So if we're increasing our density in our multifamily housing, how does that then relate to our surrounding park areas? And then that also brings up, when back in 2022, when an interim ordinance was brought before council to combine landscaping and recreation on section 40260150, that ended up not passing through the council. Eventually it was brought to the biannual review. It was determined that it was not a decision that could be made during the biannual review. We don't know how and far that's proceeded. In the December 20th Tech Forum, Elizabeth Decker did propose some new language around multifamily housing and landscaping and open space and recreation. So how does that play into the overall part of what we're doing now with landscaping and recreation, and especially multifamily housing? And schools did come up previously in a City of Vancouver discussion around including in recreational space. And at the time there was a concern that unless it's attached to a park, schools are not available during school session, which sometimes is in the winter and in the summer. So including schools in part of those numbers has to have some considerations around it. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Yeah, that is a very good consideration. And you bring up a very good point about the schools, about how they may not be able to be accessed at all hours of the day because they are in session. And so that's something that we should discuss with the Parks Board and our guest. But I would say that since they are open a portion of the time, that a certain percentage of that could be counted towards the inventory as well. Thank you. Dan, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I just got a hold of Terry. Terry said that Mr. McDonald is interested and has submitted an application.
Wonderful. Okay. Sounds like our work is done there. Good. Any other public comment? Seeing no hands raised or hearing anybody at this moment in time, I will I'll close the meeting until March. Look forward to seeing everybody in person then. Sorry I couldn't make it today.
Thanks, Mike. See you next
time. You bet. Cheers.